Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Death of Death. I'm your host, Nick Stewart, and you look gorgeous today. We're talking about the most powerful tool you can have in your apologetic arsenal. But first, I wanted to give a quick shout-out to Cameron Morgan, a good friend of the show, good friend of mine personally, and he's a Patreon supporter. He made our new awesome logo. I don't think this is the first episode to have that logo, but definitely the first time I'm bringing it to your attention. So look at your phone. Even if you're driving, look at your phone right now and just check out this awesome logo. He took the pre-existing artwork from Allison Stewart and jazzed it up and gave it a new font and added that cool circle. He just made it really cool. So thanks a lot for that, my man. And I guess I'll have to do that episode on critical race theory that you've been wanting me to do for a while. It's all I can really give you in return, so maybe you can expect that soon. I also want to give a shout out to our newest member of the elect, Cammie Donahue. She has joined our Patreon crew in supporting the show, and you can do the same for just $4 a month by going over to patreon.com/deathofdeath. One last thing I want to bring to your attention before we get into the show for today. You may know that I've been having some trouble with the website lately. I had a special page for show notes, and it kept breaking, and it was kind of a big ordeal, but it's all fixed now, and every episode is now an individual post on the website with its own individual page, so it's easy for you to access the episode or the show notes or whatever you want. Those posts go straight to the homepage along with all the blog posts, and you can access that on the homepage of deathofdeath.net. Or if you want to go to older episodes, on the menu there's podcast and there's blog, and those will take you to the individual sections. So also, new blog out, kind of an impromptu blog about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it's called Thoughts on Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and they're pretty negative. So if you're into that sort of thing, check out that blog. All right, I think that's all the business I've got today. So let's get into this. Man, this is the latest podcast in the history of the Death of Death. It's past midnight as I record this, or maybe that means that it's the earliest podcast I've ever done. That's a question for geologists or something, and not a question for me, so let's get into this. Today I wanted to give you what I consider to be the strongest tool that can be utilized in your apologetic method. The most important part of presuppositional apologetics, which we've been doing a lot of on the show in the last few episodes, and that is the concept of the philosophical bias. So we display a philosophical bias in everything that we think or believe, and that's part of the reason why neutrality is such a dangerous thing for the Christian to, you know, pretend to have when it comes to how we think and how we view evidence and how we read the Bible. We'll use this example later, but when we say something like, we can only believe what we see, you're displaying a philosophical bias toward observation. You're trusting that you can believe what you can see, meaning you're simply taking for granted that your observation can be trusted, and that is the highest standard of discerning truth, is your observation. You're going to realize that you can dismantle pretty much any argument against the Bible by recognizing where a person's philosophical bias is. So, classic example, somebody doesn't believe the Bible is true because it gives an account of miracles, like someone rising from the dead or the Red Sea parting. That's like the number one thing you'll run into. Indeed, you probably have run into it at some point. You've probably run into that exact same thing. We know people don't rise from the dead. So the Bible couldn't possibly be true if it records that thing happening. So this is probably the most typical line of thought when it comes to why someone would reject the truthfulness of the Bible, is it's a presupposition that the things recorded in the Bible couldn't have happened. So what's wrong with that argumentation? Well, it's a philosophical bias. I hope as I flesh this out, it'll get clearer and clearer, but let's start here. Let's say hypothetically, and I only say hypothetically for the sake of unbelievers. We obviously know this isn't hypothetical, but let's say that someone actually did rise from the dead. There would be no way for you to believe that because you've already presupposed that it can't happen. Like, you know, any document that records such a thing happening would have to be false. So let's say, for instance, that in March of 2016, David Bowie rose from the dead. That's 2 months after he died. So let's just say hypothetically it happened. How could you possibly believe this? You couldn't. You could never accept it as a fact because you presuppose it can happen. Every magazine in the world could do an interview with him, and every magazine in the world would have discredited itself by printing something that couldn't possibly be true. You see the problem? Even if you personally saw the risen Bowie, the argument could always be made that you were hallucinating, which is an accusation leveled against the hysterical apostles who claim to have seen the risen Christ. All 12 of them seem to be hallucinating in that same way. So, you see, like, even if it happened, there would be no way of verifying it because you have a philosophical bias that it can't happen. So you have to discredit any source that records such a thing, including yourself, really, if you were consistent. So I know one way an unbeliever would never let a Christian get away with this type of thing, and that's evolution. So if I presuppose that evolution isn't true, or in fact impossible, then there's no possible way to convince me by showing me a book that tells me how it happened. Because any such book would have to be rejected as false because it records events that I already decided are impossible. It never could have happened. See the problem? Like, you can't prove things that way. So unbelievers come to the Bible with presuppositions of its falsity. Otherwise, the Bible would count as a historical record of someone rising from the dead. So, like, why is it that the Bible can never be considered a historical document, but it has to be defended by the person using it? So why is the burden of proof on those using the Bible and not the other way around? It is a historical document filled with eyewitness accounts and records, but people already assume its claims are untrue. So the possibility of considering the Bible a historical record of such things doesn't even cross the unbeliever's mind. And that very fact shows you that they have a philosophical bias from the beginning. If they didn't presuppose that the claims of the Bible were untrue, they would be forced to accept that as a historical record of things happening that they previously thought were impossible. So that's one example of a philosophical bias that self-hinders unbelievers from accepting the Bible. But there are, you know, there's philosophical biases that they use to prove things as well, not just disprove them. So they tell you that there can't possibly be a God because you can't prove the existence of God logically. Well, they're presupposing that logic is true and the best way of understanding things, and that's a problem in and of itself. But let's examine how we could prove the legitimacy of logic. How would we do that? Logic is just a concept. It's a metaphysical thing. Can you use logic to prove the consistency and reliability of logic? No, you can't say premise A plus premise B equals conclusion C, and that proves that logic is reliable, because you're using logic. You know, if I used a Bible verse to prove the Bible, you know, the unbeliever would never accept that, because I'm using the thing that I'm trying to prove in proving it. So if, hypothetically, logic wasn't real or sound or reliable, or consistent. You would never be able to prove it unless you used other means like observation or reason. But then what problem do you run into? Well, something or someone has to prove the legitimacy of those methods without using the methods themselves. So we have a bit of an infinite regress there. So the same thing happens with reason. Like, prove to me that reason is the best way of working out problems and proving or disproving things or believing things, and it's the best way of examining evidence, but don't use a reason to prove it. In order to prove that reason is the best way of going about a debate, you would have to give me a reason for that. Otherwise, you're using other means to prove that point, and then those means have to be proven, you know, accurate and reliable. So then we just have the same problem. So there has to be an appeal to some transcendent thing above reason. And so most of the time it goes inward instead of outward, and it usually comes down to personal observation. Like, I can only know what I believe. I can only believe what I see. And so if I see that logic works, then it must work. And I'm the transcendent thing verifying that. But like I said, you know, a few episodes ago, I could literally be in a mental institution right now just hallucinating this whole thing. And then, you know, what would it matter? So observation is possibly the most outlandish of all of these. Even though we as Christians obviously know observation is a legitimate way of verifying facts because it's given to us by God to do that thing. But everyone knows that. And you just can't make sense of it without like a biblical worldview. So the idea that we can only believe what we can see with our own eyes is much different than using observation as a methodology for knowledge. So like, okay, you can only believe what you see. Okay. Here's why it's outlandish. That's just a concept. You just presented a concept. The concept is that you can only believe what you see with your own eyes. That concept can't be verified by observation. Is there any way to see the concept with your own eyes and believe it? Can you observe the assertion that you can only, you know, believe what you observe to be true? You know, so I hope that's not too out in the weeds. I know by like wording things a certain way, it can be pretty hard to understand what I'm saying. So just to put it more simply, observation, like the idea that we can only see what we believe, or we can only believe what we can see, is a concept, and you can't see a concept. So the very concept itself can't be proven with observation. So that's nuts. Like once you realize that, it's the red pill in the matrix. Like you cannot unsee and unlearn that fact. It just changes everything about the way we handle apologetics and arguments and all that stuff. And so in every method or system one would go about proving something, there's this underlying problem of a philosophical bias. The problem is they can't verify their method without using their method. So for Christians, we don't have that problem because we have a revelational epistemology. Like we talked about in episode 31, epistemology is the study of knowledge. So, you know, it's just how we know things. How we know things. So we can know some things for certain because those things are revealed by God in His Word. We can know things by observation and logic and reason because He gives us those tools to know things. But like in the unbelieving worldview, what reason do you have for accepting logic and reason and observation? Like you can't use any of those things to, you know, verify themselves, and you can't use any other thing to verify it without verifying that thing. So it gets really complicated. And, you know, that's why it's a philosophical bias, because we take it for granted. We simply take for granted that we can use observation, you know, as this standard for knowing things. But how do you know it's the standard? So if we're faced with the problem of how do we verify logic, we know that God created logic as part of His ordered universe. So we can test logic and find that it's accurate every time. but that only works to verify it because we can trust our conclusions. He gave us logic as a tool to use in amazing ways. Science, math, computers, these are all things that utilize logic. So we actually could present some premises and a conclusion to prove that logic is real and reliable, but that only works in an ordered universe created by God. It doesn't work if you can't actually know the conclusion to be true. So we can account for reasoning because God gave us the faculties with which to reason. He even says in the Bible, "Come, let us reason." So he encourages people to utilize their reasoning. We can account for observation because God gave us our eyes to see and our minds to understand and interpret the things that we see. The scientific method also only works in a biblical worldview because in order to utilize observation and repetition to establish a theory, you know, a scientific theory is something that you can see and repeat. See and repeat. Gravity. I drop a fork in midair, it falls to the ground every single time. I can see it, I can repeat it. That's a hard science. You know, you have to presuppose that the universe is ordered and that what has been will continue to be. Okay? That's induction. The idea that every time I drop the fork, it's gonna fall to the ground. That's, we're presupposing that what has always been is going to continue to be. We can't assume that one time I'm gonna drop the fork and it's gonna be suspended in midair. So we can observe the sun rising, and we take for granted that it will set tonight and it'll rise again tomorrow. And why? I mean, yes, it has always been that way, but if the universe wasn't ordered and it is just random chaos, then the fact that the sun always rises wouldn't mean anything because we would have no reason to believe that it would still be that way tomorrow. It would have no bearing on whether or not the sun would rise. There would be no reason to assume that the sun will rise unless there was an order to the universe created by a logical God. So I may have been wrong to say that observation is the most outlandish thing, because I think there's a you know, more inconsistent one than that, and that's morality. I think morality definitely has to be the most outlandish of claims to be held by an unbeliever. A common argument from atheists today, proffered by gentlemen like Christopher Hitchens and jerks like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, is to question the morality of the God of the Bible. So that's a little ironic, right? Like, we're going to presuppose moral law and then try to use it against the only thing in this universe that could have possibly given it to us. There is no morality in an atheistic worldview. It's an impossibility. Morality is not something evolved, not something developed over time, and different depending on the location or culture. Like Jeff Durbin likes to point out, in the atheist worldview, we are bags of stardust. Ziggy Stardust, maybe. But we're bags of stardust, and one bag of stardust killing another bag of stardust is not wrong. It can't be wrong in any transcendent sense, if that's all there is to it. And it can't be just some developed thing that's different at different times and different places, because, you know, the Nazis were a different time and place. You know, but we're judging them based on the morality we have today, of course, and the morality that people had back then. You know, it was always wrong, no matter what time and place the Nazis were in. If morality could change, then why would you say that the things God did in the Bible are immoral? So, like, what if back then it was moral for God to do those things? Morality isn't developed. It's something given to the world by a transcendent being. So I'm probably being a little too vague there. Morality is something given to the world by the triune God of the Bible. Period dot, as Tristan Greth would say. You can't try to use moral law against God as if that's an like insular standard that God himself is also under. Like, morality is based on God and his character. his holy character. It's not a law that hangs over God's head as well as ours. You can't use it against him. Meanwhile, you're admitting that there is such a thing as morality, and even if you try to deny all the baggage that comes with that, you really can't. Morality means moral lawgiver. There has to be a moral lawgiver if there's morality. So we have things like logic and reason and morality because God is reasonable. He's logical. He's holy in his very nature. And he gave us those capacities as his image bearers. Now, obviously, we're fallen creatures, so it's not perfect like he is, but we have morality because God has given us a moral law. That's why we don't have a more developed morality than God, or a more developed sense of logic and reason. The most important thing to know about the concept of philosophical bias is that it underlines the thing we've been saying on the show over and over again lately, and that is that there's no such thing as neutrality in this. Believers are not neutral in their belief, and unbelievers are not neutral in their unbelief. They blindly appeal to things like observation without being able to account for those things or prove those things, and they do that because they've already presupposed that there is no God. So don't pretend to be neutral. You're correct. God is all-knowing, and he reveals certain things to you in his word. There's no reason to be timid about what we know as Christians. Like, you're not impressing an unbeliever by pretending to be neutral to the facts and, you know, like trying to self-assess it with your own logic and reason. Like, it's still not a respected position by unbelievers because they're not neutral. So why are you pretending to be neutral? So these are really heavy topics, and not only is it hard to understand these things, and I'm not even sure I fully understand them yet, or if they can be fully understood, but it's even harder to unpack this information and know for sure that it makes sense. So email me at contact@deathofdeath.net and let me know any questions you may have, or if you didn't quite understand the way I explain certain things on the show, or if you need more information or something. And that will help you and I both understand presuppositional apologetics a lot better than we already do. You know, teaching is definitely the best way to learn something, and getting feedback on that teaching is extremely important also. So that's going to do it for this week on the Death of Death. Make sure to check out the changes I made to the website at deathofdeath.net. You can support the show on Patreon for $4 a month at patreon.com/deathofdeath. Send me an email at contact@deathofdeath.net. And share this episode if you liked it and got something out of it. Share until your heart's content. So I've been your host, Nick, here to tell you that unfortunately, David Bowie has not risen from the dead, to my knowledge. And if you're as committed to Christ's victory as I am, I'll be here to do it with you all again next week. Goodbye for now.